www.blogtalkradio.com.
Welcome to another edition of American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks, your host here on the 25th of April, 2005, as the year is just flying by. And a lot of things going on in the country right now, a lot of things going on in the world, and we're going to cover those tonight as we document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our individual liberty, so that we can hopefully educate in order to sustain our liberty. That's the favorite word of the ruling elite, sustainability. And Friday we had apparently Earth Day, which is was designed to promote sustainability, according to certain groups, certain articles that we've been reading and sharing. Earth Day to promote sustainability. And last Friday we replayed the broadcast from April 15th, because the previous week we had difficulty with the satellite. There were some technical problems, so I wanted to make sure that broadcast was heard. So for those that had heard the part that we had on the internet, thank you for your patience as we played it again. I felt that the faulty welds, the welds that weren't faulty, but the government was saying they were, so that the oil companies would have to dig up the 800 miles of pipeline. I felt that that needed to be heard, and so we replayed that. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break from the oil series that we're doing. And by the way, last Monday I announced that Lindsey Williams would be on with Chris Gerner on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. That was my misunderstanding. Actually, that's going to be this week and not last week. So I encourage you to listen tomorrow night, as if all goes as planned, Lindsey Williams should be with Chris Gerner on his program on this time slot, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week. So we'll see how that pans out, and I hope you'll listen and pay attention. As you know by now, with all the information that we've shared, we're being lied to about oil. We're being lied to about everything. But we have a lot of information to share with you tonight. I've got a lot of environmental news and a lot of information to share with you. So without further ado, we're going to take a break with the energy information that we had, the oil information, sharing from Lindsey Williams, and we're going to continue that on Friday. And tonight I got a bunch of other information that I want to share with you. First of which, here's a headline: airport screeners no better than before 9/11, reports say. This is from the Associated Press. Security at U.S. airports is no better under federal control than it was before September 11, 2001, the attacks of that day. A key House member says two government reports will conclude. The Government Accountability Office, the investigative arm of Congress, and the Homeland Security Department's Inspector General are expected soon to release their findings on the performance of Transportation Security Administration's screeners. A lot of people will be shocked at the billions of dollars we spent and the results they're going to see, said Representative John Mica, a Republican from Florida, as he told the Associated Press that on this last Friday. Actually, I think it was the Friday before. Yes, it was. Would have been April 17th that he made that statement. He says they're going to be surprised at the results, which confirm previous examinations of the Soviet-style screening system we've put in place. Micah chairs the House Aviation Committee. The TSA won't comment on the specifics of the report until they're released, spokesman Mark Hatfield Jr. said. On January 26, Homeland Security's Acting Inspector General Richard Skinner testified that, quote, the ability of TSA screeners to stop prohibited items from being carried through the sterile areas of the airports fared no better than the performance of screeners prior to September 11, 2001. Skinner told the Senate Homeland Security Committee that the reasons the screeners failed undercover audits had to do with training, equipment, management, and policy. So basically everything. It had to do with everything. Well, basically, it's the government control of this situation. And I would suggest to you that the transfer of the screening responsibilities into the hands of government was never really intended to keep out any terrorists, because you got to keep in mind who the terrorists are. And that's the bottom line. Who are the terrorists? Who orchestrated the Oklahoma City bombing? Timothy McVeigh and Larry Nichols? Or were they just the fall guys? Were they just the scapegoats for the whole operation? Or were they put there by mind-controlled methods? You know, I mean, there's so many unanswered questions about that. There's so many unanswered questions about September 11th. And the best the government can do is get the cousin of Homeland Security Director Mike Chertoff to write a piece in Popular Mechanics. Anyway, moving along, we have FBI protecting Osama's rights, federal officials withholding information to prevent invasion of personal privacy. So here we have the government now protecting the personal privacy of Osama bin Laden. This is from World Net Daily, April 21st, 2005. It says the FBI is preventing some information related to al-Qaeda terror leader Osama bin Laden from being released, invoking a law that permits the feds to withhold data if it would constitute a clearly unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, supposedly we're supposed to be pursuing this guy. We're supposed to be trying to locate Osama bin Laden, just like we supposedly located Saddam Hussein and ousted him. Yet the Saddam who there's according to foreign media sources, apparently the Saddam Hussein that we have in custody is pseudo Saddam. In other words, he's not the real guy. But now we have, well, according to this piece by Judicial Watch, September 24, 2003, declassified, according to a government watchdog group, Judicial Watch, which, by the way, I do not endorse, they said in a September 24, 2003, declassified secret FBI report obtained by the organization through the Freedom of Information Act, the FBI invoked Exemption 6 under the Freedom of Information Act law on behalf of bin Laden. you know, we got a piece at sweetliberty.org in the 9/11 section. 9/11.sweetliberty.org. It says, General says capturing bin Laden is not part of mission. And that's what you have to keep in mind. All of this stuff that's going on is not, you know, the Bushes and the bin Ladens are in bed together. They're business partners through a joint business venture called the Carlyle Group. This is just one of many countless conflicts of interest that are going on, and yet somehow Ben Chertoff, when he writes the Popular Mechanics piece, can't seem to figure that out. Yeah, he's hung up on pods on the bottom of the plane and various other things. At any rate, moving along here, ABC News, dated April 19, 2005, just in time for the Oklahoma City anniversary, secret FBI report highlights domestic terror. Experts warn of future Timothy McVeighs. It says a secret FBI report obtained by ABC News identifies 22 domestic terror organizations as the current subjects of 338 active FBI field investigations. The Aryan Nations and other white supremacist groups are cited in the report for hate crimes, firebombings, threats via email, as well as robberies and murders. The National Alliance, one of the largest neo-Nazi organizations in the world, is subject to 51 FBI investigations alone, according to the report. In fact, there are ticking time bombs, said Brian Levin, director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism in at California State University. San Bernardino, Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism. Isn't that interesting? This Levin says these people are ticking time bombs who have the capacity, skill, and hatred to carry out acts worse than what Timothy McVeigh carried out 10 years ago. And again we ask, was Timothy McVeigh mind-controlled? Was Timothy McVeigh simply a scapegoat, knowing what we know about the terrorists and who they really are? Levin and other terrorism experts say the Internet has become the principal recruitment tool, attracting the loners who and the disturbed who boast of finding viable U.S. targets. Levin said, quote, "We are likely to see more terrorist attacks by lone wolves or small cells. They're in the bedroom accessing bomb-making information on the net and accessing hateful rhetoric, which empowers them." Well, there's the case to make. There's making the case for the control of the Internet, isn't it? James P. Wickstrom, and by the way, folks, the SweetLiberty.org website is already on one of those lists. It's already being blocked in certain countries as a hate site, and it's being tracked by at least one U.S. embassy. I forget which country. As you go to google.com/Uncle Sam and put in sweetliberty.org, it comes up on a hate group list, a list of websites that the government has to track hate. You know, and nothing is hateful at all about Sweet Liberty. Jackie deals with the Jewish question, but it's dealt with in a loving way. And she's careful in her dealings with it. And nobody hates, we don't hate Jews. We don't hate anyone. But we do despise the attack by anyone, Jew or Gentile alike, that would undermine individual liberty. And that's what this is all about. So that's the way I see it. But folks, they're making the case more and more. Domestic terrorism, and who's going to be a terrorist in the future? Anybody who speaks their mind, anybody who doesn't go with the flow, will be labeled a hater, will be labeled a terrorist. And that's what we have coming up. Moving along here, Senate okays $81 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan. The Senate on Thursday overwhelmingly approved $81 billion for wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and a spending bill that would push the total cost of combat and reconstruction past $300 billion. Both the Senate and House versions of the measure would give President Bush much of the money he requested, but the bills differ over what portion should go to military operations. Bush urged a quick resolution of the differences and passage of the bill that focuses on taxpayer dollars, on providing the tools our troops and diplomats need now. The Pentagon says it needs the money by the first week of May, so Senate and House negotiators are expected to act quickly to send the president a final bill. The question here is, where's the end to this? There's no end in sight here as we go past $300 billion. Folks, we got a national debt in this country that's quickly approaching the $8 trillion mark. We're quickly approaching the $8 trillion mark. How can we continue this way? And the answer is future generations. There is a deliberate effort, I would suggest to you, to plunge this country as far into the ground as possible and to make this country, reduce this country to third world status. And anybody can see this if they just open their eyes and see what's being done. Here we see Greenspan budget deficits pose threats. Well, we can file this into the duh category. Bloated budget deficits pose a danger to the nation's long-term economic health. Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan warned anew Thursday. He issued a fresh call to policymakers to move swiftly to put the government's fiscal house in order. Well, how does this guy want the government's fiscal house in order? There's no way that the government's fiscal house can ever be in order as long as we are enslaved to the institution of which Alan Greenspan is chair. And I'm talking about the Federal Reserve System. As long as the 1913 Federal Reserve Act is law on the books, the government's house, fiscal house, could never be in order. But that's the scam of the whole situation. Greenspan only very briefly touched on the economy's current performance, saying activity appears to be expanding at a reasonably good pace, an assessment he has made repeatedly this year. Greenspan said the persistence of swollen budget deficits in the years ahead would cause the economy to stagnate or worse unless the situation is reversed. The budget deficit is a problem because it is projected to rise significantly as the first of 78 million baby boomers start to retire in 2008. All the more reason to reduce the population, I would add. Last year, the government produced a budget deficit of $412 billion, a record in dollar terms. The deficit this year is projected to shatter that record, coming in at an estimated $427 billion. So that's all I'm going to share with that. By the way, Greenspan, not only is he chairman of the Federal Reserve System, the biggest monetary scam in the world, but he's also the alternate U.S. governor to the International Monetary Fund, the world banking system. All right, moving along. Got some China news. China ranks third in global trade. The relentless growth, this is from CNN, by the way, the relentless growth of China's economy and its extraordinary rise as a supplier to the world's consumers has pushed it to third spot among global traders behind only the United States and Germany. New figures released by the World Trade Organization, and that's precisely what the problem is, the WTO, shows China's total two-way trade in goods and services last year was $1,283.8 billion, eclipsing Japan's figure of $1,248 billion. Surging demand for China's low-cost electronics, white goods, textiles, sporting goods, and other commodities saw its merchandise exports jump 35% to reach almost $600 billion last year. That was matched by a 36% rise in its merchandise imports, including oil, coal, and iron ore, to power its industrial base to a figure of more than $560 billion. China's services trade, however, was relatively small, with exports of $59 billion and imports of $70 billion. I'm not going to finish that, but the bottom line is things continue to go forward as Americans continue to buy Chinese products. And, folks, what we got to do is we're going to have to start examining what we're buying at the store to see where it's made. And if there's any way that we can possibly get what we need without buying and patronizing China, then we need to do that. Find American and buy as much USA products as we possibly can find, because we need to keep jobs here at home. And I know in many cases it's almost impossible to find what you need, especially electronics. It's just amazing that there's so few electronics that are made here in this country. Moving along here, continuing with the China information. Here we see China lifts lid on cleaner toilets. China is coming clean about its filthy toilets, first hosting a World Toilet Summit, and now about to hold its first ever toilet exhibition, which will lift the lid on new technology. The World Toilet Expo, and this is from the World Toilet Organization, folks. The World Toilet Expo will run from May 8th to the 10th in Shanghai, China's most fashionable city, with some experts going potty about a dial-a-poo phone line people can call to find the nearest public toilet, the Shanghai Daily said on Wednesday. Hang Yurong, a Shanghai Public Sanitation Bureau official, was quoted by state media as saying, quote, it's expected to solve the long-lasting problem that tourists, cab drivers, and people unfamiliar with the city cannot find a toilet when they need one. Shanghai officials said the city planned to revamp 500 of its 3,900 public toilets this year, build new ones, and reserve two-thirds for women. The current one-to-one ratio is not reasonable, Hans added without explanation. Beijing, eager to freshen up its primitive privies before it hosts the 2008 Summer Olympics, recently added high-tech self-cleaning toilets near tourist sites like the Forbidden City and Summer Palace and promised to keep them stocked with toilet paper. Most of China's public lavatories are squat-style pits with no running water, toilet paper, or hand-washing facilities. And, of course, the United Nations has a plan, has their hand in this as well, as the World Toilet is a reality. WorldToilet.org is the website for the World Toilet Organization, the other WTO. And thanks to Trish, I believe it was, Trish Britton, who discovered the World Toilet Organization for us. At any rate, moving along here. House okays production-based energy bill. $8 billion bill calls for increased use of ethanol and drilling in Alaska's National Wildlife Refuge. The House approved an $8 billion bill Thursday with incentives to increase domestic production of crude oil, natural gas, coal, nuclear, and other energy sources. The Republican-written bill would also boost production of ethanol, a corn-distilled fuel additive, and allowing oil drilling in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, ANWR. The House measure would have to be reconciled with the Senate's version before it could become law. The Senate Energy Committee is expected to finish writing its bill, energy bill, in May, followed by a vote in the full Senate. Well, I would suggest to you folks that May is going to be a little late for it to make much of a difference. And secondly, when you got all of your refineries, see, the problem isn't so much supply as it is with the refineries. We have plenty of oil, and that's the lie that's being put in place. Until you start working on the problem of not having refineries in this country, the refineries that we have are aging, and we don't have the ability to take the oil and make it into something that it can be used. And different parts of the country have their own formulas as well of gasoline that's required. So once again, you have government regulations pushing up the price and restrictions upon refinery advancement due to so-called environmental concerns. And in reality, the environment is just being used to control you. And that's what it's all about, control. Here we see from CNN, oil nears $55 on refinery problems, what I was just talking about. Oil prices made further gains back toward $55 a barrel on Friday as traders and said sustained demand and refinery outages could strain U.S. gasoline supplies ahead of peak summer motoring demand. U.S. light crude rose 50 cents to $54.30 a barrel, making a four-day rally that has added over $4 to prices. Oil is 25% above levels at the end of 2004 and nearing the all-time peak of $58.28 struck earlier this month. London Brent gained 64 cents to $54.65 a barrel. A hefty surplus in U.S. crude oil inventories and signs that the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries is boosting output again have done little to calm markets worried about insufficient transport and heating fuels to meet demand later this year. It's a product-led market, said Colin Tang, an oil trader with French investment bank Kalyan in Singapore. Physical crude, he says, is trading at big discounts to the major markets, which implies there's plenty of crude out there. How widely reported is that going to be, folks? Dealers are increasingly anxious about oil product supplies, particularly in the United States, where a series of refinery glitches has raised fears that plants already operating near capacity may struggle to meet rising demand. U.S. gasoline prices jumped nearly 4 cents on Thursday and edged higher to $1.625 a gallon on Friday. The premium of gasoline over to crude, the so-called crack spread, was at least $14 a barrel, up more than $2 from a week ago. Tang said, quote, if you believe the worldwide growth and the requirement for oil products will continue, and on top of that you have finite refining capability, then you have to say that the cracks are the thing to own, he said. But I'm going to leave that article there because there's a lot more to cover. Here we see Bush to raise oil concerns with Saudis. Says high oil threatens global economy. Wants Saudis to increase production. Saudis promise more oil. Says U.S. President George W. Bush said Tuesday he will raise concerns about the effects of high energy costs on the global economy. And since when do we have to worry about the global economy, folks? We should be worrying about our own economy and let the global people worry about their own economy. We're embroiled in this United Nations system. He says high energy costs will have detrimental effects on the global economy, and he'll address that when he meets next week with Saudi Crown Prince Abdullah. I'm going to explain to him that, you know, high price crude oil will hurt the international economy, Bush told CNBC's Ron Asana in an interview. The topic of energy, such as near-record high gasoline prices, is expected to be high on the agenda when Bush hosts Abdullah at his Crawford, Texas ranch Monday. The president says he plans to ask the Saudi prince whether it is possible for his country to step up oil production. And again, I say, it's not a supply situation, folks. It's a refinery situation. Bush added, I think they're near capacity, and so we've just got to get a straight answer from the government as to what they think their excess capacity is. Adding that he would not characterize the Saudi production as flat out yet. OPEC has already raised production by 300,000 barrels per day and 29.76 million barrels per day in March. More than half of the monthly increase comes from top world exporter Saudi Arabia, which lifted supply by 155,000 barrels per day to 9.35 million barrels per day, OPEC said in a report earlier this month. But see, here's the thing. If you can't refine it, if you can't take that oil and use it any manner, that you have to have the refineries, folks, and that's the problem. There's problems with our refineries. We don't have enough refining capacity in this country. And this is a ticking time bomb. This is a Hegelian dialectic situation waiting to happen. As we had the explosion in Texas, I think it was a Texas refinery that caught fire and exploded. And all you have to have is some more of that kind of incident, and you're going to have a situation where there's a huge crisis in this country, and it's already beginning. We got to take a break. I got a lot more environmental news to share with you. I got information on the NAFTA corridors in Texas up to Oklahoma. So comments from Vicente Fox on how U.S. and Mexico are to be integrated. A lot more information to come, folks. Stay with us. We'll continue on the other side of the break.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Are the dinosaurs really extinct? Don't be so sure. We'll get the answer on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moment's host, Ian Taylor.
Are dinosaurs extinct? Decide for yourself. In 1911, Dutch explorers returned to the West with stories about a huge man-eating dragon that lived on the islands of Komodo. This is one of the 13,000 islands that stretch from mainland Asia to New Guinea. Scientists dismissed their stories as impossible, since dragons are the stuff of myth, while if they call them dinosaurs, these are said to have been extinct for millions of years. Eventually, science had to accept the reality of the Komodo dragon. These huge reptiles grow to a length of 11 feet and can weigh 450 pounds after lunch. They are fast enough in short bursts to catch and bring down a wild horse, a deer, or even a man, and they are also good swimmers. In fact, the Komodo dragons have killed and eaten 7 men in recent years, and they've been known to enter a small village on the island and steal goats. Their layers of serrated teeth harbor microbes that can easily cause a fatal infection, so they eventually catch up with just about anything they bite. If the fossil dinosaurs were anything like the Komodo dragon, we can all be thankful that most of them are no longer around. Are dinosaurs extinct? It certainly looks as if at least one species of dinosaur under the name dragon is still very much alive.
For a free copy of our Creation Resource Catalog, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
Broadcast American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks. Thanks for joining me this Monday and Friday. Don't forget, we're going to continue with the Lindsay Williams information, the energy non-crisis, and I hope you'll join us then. And also tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday, Lindsay should be joining Chris Gerner. If everything goes as planned, all 3 nights he'll be there talking about the energy non-crisis and the orchestrated situations that we have in this country to cripple this country financially, and so you won't want to miss that. Meanwhile, as he covers his information, as we deal with this stuff, I came across this article written by George Crispin, and folks, this helps to further give you evidence of Lindsay Williams, that what he says is true, that what he says is accurate. The article is simply headlined, Oil Reserves Are Increasing. And again, written by George Crispin. And this piece is found on lewrockwell.com. And it's kind of interesting. I want to share this with you right now. It says, Eugene Island is an underwater mountain located about 80 miles off the coast of Louisiana in the Gulf of Mexico. In 1973, oil was struck and offshore platform Eugene 330 erected. The field began production at 15,000 barrels a day, then gradually fell off, as is normal, to 4,000 barrels a day in 1989. Then came the surprise. It reversed itself and increased production to 13,000 barrels a day. Probable reserves have been increased to 400 million barrels from 60 million barrels. The field appears to be filling in from below, and the crude coming up today is from a geological age different from the original crude, which leads to speculation that the world has limitless supplies of petroleum. Now, where else are you going to hear that information, folks? All we hear from the controlled media is that we have a finite supply of oil. And yet, according to this information, these oil wells, which were supposed to be depleted, are starting to fill up again. This really interested some scientists. Thomas Gold, astronomer and professor emeritus of Cornell, held for years that oil is actually renewable primordial syrup continually manufactured by the Earth under ultra-hot conditions and tremendous pressures. The substance migrates upward, picking up bacteria that attack it, making it appear to have an organic origin an example, coming from dinosaurs and vegetation, which obviously if it came from dinosaurs, it would be finite, wouldn't it? As best I have found so far, Russia scientists support his position, at least that petroleum is of primordial origin. There is now plenty of evidence around proving the presence of methane in our universe. It is easy to see it is a part of the formation of the Earth. Under the right conditions of temperature and pressure, it converts to more complex hydrocarbons. Roger Anderson, an oceanographer and executive director of Columbia's Energy Research Center, proposed studying the behavior of this reservoir. The underwater landscape around Eugene Island is weird, cut with faults and fissures that belch gas and oil. The field is operated by Penn's Energy Company. Anderson proposed to study the action of the sea bottom around the mountain and the field at its top, and persuaded the United States Department of Energy to ante up $10 million, which was matched by a consortium of oil giants including Chevron, Exxon, and Texcor. This work began about the time 3D seismic technology was introduced to oil exploration. Anderson was able to stack 3D images, resulting in a 4D image that showed the reservoir in three spatial dimensions and enabled researchers to track the movement of oil. Their most stunning find was a deep fault at the bottom corner of the computer scan that showed oil literally gushing in. Anderson says, quote, "We could see the stream. It wasn't even debated that is what was happening," unquote. Work continued for 5 years until funds ran out and they were unable to continue. Now, why did funds run out, folks? They used up the money. Isn't it interesting that the government didn't renew the grant? With the world having 40 years of proven reserves in hand, it is difficult to interest the major oil producers in much exploration, let alone something done merely for research, and so far from the current accepted theory of a fossil origin for oil. Similar occurrences have been seen at other Gulf of Mexico fields, at the Cook Inlet oil field, at oil fields in Uzbekistan, and it is possible this accounts for the longevity of the Saudi Arabian fields, where few new finds have been made, yet reserves have doubled while the fields have been exploited mercilessly for 50 years. Not only can the doom and gloomers not show us running out of natural resources we recycle, but now there appears to be good odds of a limitless supply of petroleum working its way up to where we can capture it. A caveat, gold's theory is not yet accepted by all scientists, and this writer, George Crispin, says that's probably all the more reason to trust it. And certainly there is a lot of junk science going on, but folks, that's an example of something right there. We're told we have a finite supply of oil. Lindsay Williams says that they wouldn't let them develop the oil that they find. And now we have this George Crispin writing about research from Roger Anderson and others, Thomas Gold, who says the oil wells that we have are filling up again. And yet the controlled media says we have a finite supply of oil. See, this is the energy crisis for the purpose of control. And that's what it's all about. Moving along here. From USA Today, Texas is set to supersize highways. I don't know what date this is, but at any rate, it's very recent, I can tell you that. Dateline Austin. Texas are known for doing things in a big way, but the state is planning a futuristic highway system that's gargantuan even by Texas standards. Now, folks, we told you this was coming. And this is what this is. This is the NAFTA corridors we're talking about here. 4,000 miles of expressways, mostly toll lanes. The Trans-Texas Corridor, almost a quarter mile wide, would carry cars, trucks, trains, and pipelines for water, oil, natural gas, electricity, and fiber optics. The roads would be built over the next 50 years at a cost of up to $185 billion, mostly with private money. The network eventually would crisscross the state, diverting long-distance traffic onto superhighways designed to skirt crowded urban centers. Trucks and trains carrying hazardous materials would also use the highways. The state's goal: relieve some of the nation's worst traffic congestion, fed by Texas' booming population and the exchange of goods with Mexico that has been accelerated since 1994 by the North American Free Trade Agreement. And that is precisely the situation. This is yet another created crisis. Where did Texas' booming population come from? Well, I would suggest in part it comes from the constant flood of immigrants, or shall we call them migrants, that find their way across the borders. But they say that the North American Free Trade Agreement has created this problem of congestion, and now Governor Rick Perry is going to do something about it. He's credited with creating the Transit Texas Corridor and calls it a visionary transportation plan that could become a national model. And that's the purpose. Perry touts it as the USA's most ambitious transportation project since President Dwight Eisenhower and Congress launched the interstate highway system in 1956. He says, quote, "We looked at our interstate system and thought, this system is 50 or 60 years old. At the choke points in our cities, it has basically reached the end of its useful life." Actually, that was Mike Crucey, an Austin Republican, and the author of the legislation authorizing the corridor. He says, "We thought it was time for us to think 50 years in advance." But criticism is rolling in from farm groups, environmentalists, believe it or not, and some local politicians targeting the project's proposed route with and financing, and even the need for it. Dick Collerman, transportation issues coordinator for the Lone Star chapter of the Sierra Club, says, quote, "We think it's financially irresponsible. We're a sprawl state," they say. The whole state should be making efforts to build in a more compact way. The state is holding 640 public meetings, and initial federal approval is expected in the spring of 2006. A private consortium led by the Spanish firm Cintra has been selected to build the first segment, a 316-mile, $7.2 billion toll road that would roughly parallel Interstate 35 from Dallas to San Antonio. The precise path has not been determined, but initial plans put it 30 to 50 miles east of I-35. I-35 between here, that is Austin, and San Antonio, is one of the most crowded, deadly stretches of interstate in the country. More than 210,000 vehicles a day, many of them 18-wheelers, travel along that portion that runs through Austin, according to this Texas Department of Transportation. That number is projected to grow to 234,000 in 2030 and 320,000 in 2050. The metropolitan areas linked by I-35, also including Dallas, Fort Worth, Waco, and Laredo, are home to about half of Texas' 22.5 million people. In the next 20 years, we'll add 9 million more. About half of them also will live in that corridor, said Robert Nichols, one of the five members of the Texas Transportation Committee overseeing the project. Perhaps the most noteworthy aspect of the plan, private contractors would bankroll and build the highways, then charge tolls for up to 50 years. The contractors would rent the right-of-way from the state. Highways and traditionally have been financed by federal and state governments. But now we're living in the age of public-private partnerships, folks. This way of paying for roads is the wave of the future, says Tim Lomax. Did you hear that, folks? This way of paying for roads is the wave of the future, according to Tim Lomax, a research engineer at the Texas Transportation Institute at Texas A&M University, who studies national traffic congestion and commuting. Mary Peters, head of the Federal Highway Administration, says $284 billion transportation bill pending in Congress gives state and local governments more flexibility to use toll roads. giving drivers a choice between sitting in congestion or spinning about what it takes for a good cup of coffee, and helps people who need a quick route to work, their errands, or a child's ball game, and it helps free up traffic for everyone else, regardless of which lanes they choose, she says. Now, not all Texans buy this vision of the future. Among them, the 385,000-member Texas Farm Bureau opposes the project, saying it would consume 140 acres of prime farm and ranch land per mile. 140 acres of prime farmland and ranch land per mile, ladies and gentlemen. 140 acres per mile. Steve Pringle, the Bureau's legislative director, says if the corridor splits your farm right down the middle, how do you get farm equipment from one side of the corridor to the other? You might have to go 20 or 30 miles one way or the other to get across. The Farm Bureau is supporting legislation that would cut the highway's width by 40% and require an exit for every state highway and local road. Also opposing this idea is David Stahl, who founded Corridor Watch to monitor the project, and says it has hundreds and hundreds of members in 133 of Texas' 254 counties. His organization does. He says it's not being taken on as a transportation project. It's a revenue scheme, he says. The state can condemn private land for the corridor, then sell or lease it to private businesses such as gas stations or restaurants. There was no traffic study, he says, that states any community was clamoring for a project like TTC. Like other opponents, Stahl acknowledges that Texas has traffic problems, but he says this is the wrong way to fix them. It's being rammed through, he says, and the people of Texas don't know what it is. And believe it or not, some environmentalists oppose the corridor because they believe that the demand for it will fade in coming decades. The age of cheap fuel is over, says Kellerman of the Sierra Club. Expensive fuel will mean fewer vehicles. People will find alternatives. If they turned TTC to just rails, the Sierra Club would stand up and cheer. Communities along I-35, including Dallas, Laredo, and others, have formed the River of Trade Corridor Coalition, worried that the project would siphon thousands of trucks off I-35. They want the truck and car lanes built within 3 to 5 miles of I-35, says Dallas City Council member Sandy Grayson, who chairs the group. If it's 30 to 50 miles out, it would just devastate the cities and towns along I-35. Take Pearsall, a town of 8,000 between San Antonio and Laredo. It's partnering with a local company to build a truck stop that could generate $100,000 a year in sales tax revenue for the city, City Manager Albert Urista says. That's a sizable chunk on Pearsall's $6 million annual budget. Since NAFTA, Urista says, since NAFTA, we've done a lot of investing along I-35. If you build another road parallel to this road, it's going to have devastating consequences. The tax base will be hurt. Jobs are going to be lost. I just don't see a big need for it. Maybe you need it around Austin, but to build a second road here doesn't make sense. Well, folks, it does make sense if you consider that they want to start eliminating other roads. Other roads are to be eliminated as a part of this whole plan of the NAFTA corridors and implementing the Wildlands Project. The website for the Wildlands Project is wildlandsproject.org. Wildlandsproject.org. I encourage you to go in and read their mission statement. One of their goals is to create large roadless areas. The only way you can implement large roadless areas is to build your roads in such a way that you have all the transportation in one spot. And by the way, I would add to that, what better way to orchestrate terrorism when you have one main artery going through the country? You know? I mean, all you have to do is blow something up along that one corridor and basically your transportation has come to a halt for the whole country. But bear in mind also, as part of this NAFTA corridor situation, there will also be what's called inland ports. And these are inspection points inside the country rather than inspecting goods at the border, further eroding your border, because when traffic can go through your border unstopped, unchecked, you have no border. Here we see roads becoming wildlife killing fields. And this is another pretense for removing roads, folks. This is from Whitehorse, Yukon. Four more animals have been killed by vehicles in the last 2 weeks, adding to what's already a record year for road kills in Southern Lakes, in the Southern Lakes region. Regional biologist Rob Flakiewicz of the Department of Environment called upon drivers Thursday to exercise extra caution as animals began frequenting the roadside at this time of year for one reason or another. The Carcross caribou herd is moving down into its winter range in the Tagish and Marsh Lake area, with particularly high roadside activity between Jake's Corner and Judas Creek, he told reporters during a briefing. He says the caribou are coming back, and it's time to alert the drivers that they are on the road again. They're coming down to their winter range, and they will be on their winter range for the whole winter. Well, winter range. This must have been from a while ago. But the point is that after the roads are eliminated. See, roads are being demonized as detrimental to the wildlife, and that's the whole point of that article. Here we see from WorldNet Daily, dated April 19, 2005, Mexico and the U.S. to be integrated. Fox's Foreign Secretary envisions cooperative future, slams Minutemen. It says Mexico's Foreign Secretary said he expects Mexico and the U.S. will one day be integrated and has blasted the Minuteman project, calling for prosecution of the citizen border monitors. Secretary Luis Ernesto Derbez, I can't read this name, spoke to the group of University and Texas Pan-American students last week in Edinburgh, Texas, reported KRGV-TV. The official spoke about the future of U.S.-Mexico relations, saying he envisions a day when the United States and its southern neighbor would be integrated. Okay, I guess it wasn't Fox himself, it was his foreign secretary. Does it really matter? We know that Fox feels that way himself. Anyway, Clarissa Pina told KRGV, quote, "I don't believe there will be a complete integration here. I don't think that's right." Aaron Pina said, quote, "From my stance, we should be separate because of terrorism and problems with terrorism. We do have to have secure borders and not just people roaming back and forth." Well, obviously, this Aaron Pina is ignorant of the plan. After the speech, Bautista spoke to reporters about the Minuteman Project. Hundreds of American volunteers, many legally carrying guns and waving flags, are keeping watch around the clock until the end of the month along a 23-mile stretch of border between Arizona and Mexico. The volunteers reportedly are intimidating illegal aliens with their presence and alerting the Border Patrol via cell phones or radios when they see people crossing. Because the Minutemen feel frustrated, or whatever reason they are doing this, Bautista said, they are trying to take the drug war into their own hands. One thing I can tell you is that the U.S. of the 21st century is not the U.S. of the 19th century. Isn't that interesting? He says, one thing I can tell you is that the U.S. of the 21st century is not the U.S. of the 19th century. The official added he hopes the group and its members are prosecuted. Bautista said he thinks the war on drugs is being won thanks to Mexico's efforts. Well, I think that's enough of that. Folks, it's amazing how fast time flies. We're already running out of time. There's so much information here that I wanted to clear off. I've got information about global warming, climate change affecting species, study shows. Apparently, I'm not going to have time to share that tonight. Retreat of Arctic ice gathers pace. It says glaciers in the Arctic, Antarctic are retreating at an increasing rate, and what scientists said on Thursday was a clear sign of climate change. Folks, there's no evidence. There's no scientific evidence proving that human beings are causing climate change. Never forget that. There absolutely is no evidence that proves, and probably no evidence that even suggests, that human beings are causing climate change. The Earth goes through natural heating and cooling cycles. I say this, I sound like a broken record, but that's the reality of it. He says most of the glaciers on the Antarctic Peninsula near the southernmost tip of South America have retreated over the past 50 years as temperatures have warmed, according to a study from the British Antarctic Survey and U.S. Geological Survey. Inland glaciers appear to be accelerating their descent to the ocean, threatening to raise the sea level. David Vaughn, one of the authors of the study, said the widespread retreat of the glaciers on the Antarctic Peninsula over the past 50 years was largely caused by climate change. Are humans responsible? He says we can't say for sure. Well, of course he can't say that, because it's not true. We can't say for sure, but we are one step closer to answering this important question. You see, they're going to do everything they can to try to manufacture something that says that we are to blame for this. And the reality is, more than likely, there may be some warming going on, but the Earth goes through natural cycles, and the cycles are longer than our lifetime. So consequently, these are not cycles that you're necessarily going to know. Here's another one. The first comprehensive survey of glaciers on the Antarctic Peninsula has shown that the rivers of ice are shrinking, mostly because of warming of the local climate. It is unclear, however, whether the increased temperature causing the shrinkage is a natural regional effect or the result of human-influenced global warming, said the scientist who conducted the study published this week in the journal Science. You see, they're admitting that they don't know. And the bottom line is, they'll continue forward with this Kyoto Protocol, and I would imagine they'd want to get the United States into it as soon as possible, because time is running out on the Kyoto Protocol. It's set to expire in 2012. But I got a feeling more and more what they're going to do is they're going to keep on implementing legislatively aspects of the Kyoto Protocol into law until they have actually implemented the whole thing. And we've signed the treaty, but we've never even ratified it. Folks, we got to go. Thanks for joining us this week. Join Chris tomorrow with Lindsay Williams, and I'll be back on Friday with more of the Energy Non-Crisis. God bless you. Have a good night.
Are you? That is the question and the name of the program. To learn what the question means and what the answers are, tune in every Sunday afternoon and Rice McLeod will give you the answers. Who are you? Check the schedule.